Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Good afternoon, everybody. It is the Steve Jones Show on a Tuesday. Matt Catrillo here with you. Steve will soon be there from the Sunbury Motors Studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Ford, Kia, Hyundai, a great selection of pre-owned inventory. A great service department that gets it done for your current vehicle with the diagnostics, with the inspections, with all the simple things that you need done for your vehicle. And you have a great sales staff that's not just there for the sale, but is there for you. And it's all part of the Sunbury Motors guarantee. All at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And online at sunburymotors.com. Another busy show coming up today. Former MLB closer Heath Bell is back with us today. And Neil Kulong is back to break down Steelers and the NFL. And Deshaun Watson speaking to the media today, the first time since more reports about, or I should say the bombshell report about him seeking 66 different masseuses. That was according to the New York Times about last week when that came out. And basically he said he regrets the distractions and the suits that's caused for the Browns and his family. So I'm sure we'll get into that. Steelers offseason. Steelers wrapped up OTAs, as most NFL teams did, and now pretty much looking forward to training camp at this point, which is about a month and a half away for mostly everybody. So we'll get into that and more with Neil today as well. We've talked a lot about this LIV stuff with the U.S. Open beginning this week. We'll get more into that as the week goes on. Jerry Dulac from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, Steelers Radio, is going to join us 4:35 on Friday. And that's dominated the headlines a lot the last couple of days, but we still have an NBA Finals going on and a pivotal Game 5 last night, won by the Golden State Warriors, and kind of was a ugly game for the most part overall. Both teams didn't really shoot the ball particularly well, and a lot of attention's been given to Steph Curry because for the first time ever, he was held without a three. He was 0 for 9 from the field last night. Didn't have that great a night in general. 7 of 22 shooting at 16 points. And luckily for the Warriors, they had other pieces that were able to step up, especially Andrew Wiggins. I mean, he was just tremendous in that fourth quarter alone last night, finishing with 26 points. Klay Thompson, of course, hit a lot of big shots. Gary Payton II had 15 points off the bench. Poole had 14 off the bench. And you kind of felt like the Warriors' experience of them being there really, really played a big factor last night. It has this whole series, but in particular last night, because that was a game that Boston could have taken, and then you take it back on the road to Game 6, and maybe you close out at home. Now you're down 3-2, and now you have to win out if you want to win an NBA title. And you only get one more home game now after that. So that was a miss for Boston last night. And Steve has talked about Jason Tatum's impact on this series. He's even said after Game 4 he can be better. And he was slightly better, but again, you felt like nobody could get them over the hump last night, where you had a couple different guys for Golden State that did. Tatum didn't have a terrible game. He had 27 points last night, 10 of 20 shooting, 5 of 9 from beyond the arc, and 10 rebounds. So we had a double-double, but just hasn't been able to make that, like, instinctual play either. But just kind of getting back to Steph Curry for a sec. As I mentioned, he's gotten a lot of attention for the lackluster game he had last night. And now the questions become, should he still be the NBA Finals MVP should the Warriors win this series, whether it's Thursday night or Sunday? And I just don't understand that question. Because look at what he did in Game 4. Everyone's talking about that was probably the signature moment in his career, what he did in Game 4, and I would tend to agree. And all of a sudden, we're questioning whether he's going to be an NBA Finals MVP because of a lackluster game last night, and his team still won? What are we doing here? After that kind of performance, he's allowed to have an off night, in my opinion, when you put up that kind of performance. You'd rather see him shoot the ball better, at least get a three. I know that's a big staggering factor there. But I just don't get this Steph Curry hate all of a sudden, Steve, that, maybe he's not the NBA Finals MVP. Of course he is. If he didn't have his game four that he had the other night, this is a different series. Case closed.
Look, we have a lot of very simple people that cover these things, and they just do it for conversation and clicks.
I know.
That's why I can't listen to it.
I fall for it every time, I know.
And it's always the flavor of the moment. You got to actually know the game.
Yes.
Understand the game. Most fans understand the game better than some of the people that talk about it. To be honest with you, Andrew Wiggins has played well, especially in games 4 and 5. No question. He's been a critical part of why the Warriors have won. But they are not here without Steph Curry. And Curry last night, this is where for the Celtics it's problematic. If you were to have told the Celtics before the game that Steph Curry would not make a three in game 5, you'd be all looking at each other in the hotel saying, this is our night. Right? Well, he didn't make a three last night, and it wasn't their night. Again, for the Celtics, number one, they played really no better than a ragged, mediocre first half. Right? I mean, simple as that. Golden State just flat out outplayed them. But the Celtics, to their credit, played a terrific third quarter. Hit 8 straight threes. And as well as Wiggins played, especially in the fourth quarter last night, really it was 2 big threes by Klay Thompson, followed by the 3 by Poole. You know, the miracle bank-in shot from 38 feet, but it took a 74-72 Celtics lead and made it 75-74 Golden State. That was the key sequence right there. And the Celtics could not hit a shot in the fourth quarter. And the biggest problem the Celtics have, without question, are the turnovers. They are 1-7 in the playoffs when they have turned it over 16 times or more. 1-7. The Celtics have 13 wins when they turn it over in the playoffs, fewer than 16 times. Right? That's what it comes down to. You know, Jaylen Brown comes down. He's got to flip the ball behind his back. No, just drive the ball. The Celtics have to do a better job of keeping it simple, because when they try to overcomplicate it, they get in trouble, and Golden State, to its credit, has played well defensively, and they have forced the Celtics into the turn. But the Celtics have been to borrow a Joe Paternoism, too loosey-goosey with the ball. Stop being loosey-goosey with the ball. Make the sharp, clean pass. Get an open look. Take the shot. If it goes in, great. And that's what they need to do. And, again, they hit a night where Steph Curry... the Celtics have had two opportunities here. I'm not going to count game two as an opportunity. I think you kind of felt game two, Golden State was against the wall losing game one, and they would come out and play the way they did in game two. But they had their chance in game four at home, where they had a four-point lead at home. And Curry just made all the big plays. That was chance number one. Chance number two was last night after playing a great third quarter. If they played a functional fourth quarter, I think they won the game. Because Golden State really was not playing that well. And Curry wasn't playing well. And Golden State kind of got away with it last night in the fourth quarter because the Celtics played that poorly. And stop talking to the officials. Just stop.
That's a league-wide issue.
Right. Well, yeah, that's actually, to me, one of Curry's issues. That's yes. One of Curry's issues, too. Curry complains on every single play.
Curry, LeBron, you name it.
You know, it's like, just stop talking to these guys. Just play. Yeah, and, you know, the Celtics, I mean. But what cracks me up last night is that Smart gets a T. He deserved it. I have no idea what Udoka did to get his, the coach. I'm going to assume he said some magic word or words. But Draymond Green doesn't? I mean, you got to be kidding me. Draymond Green, on a timeout when Tatum was going to the huddle, wanted to take the ball away and went into the Celtics huddle. That's a T, right? That is the definition. Technically, get out of here. They should have teed him up. You can't do that. You can't be standing in the other guy's huddle. Get out of there. That's not your huddle. Oh. Green is valuable to what Golden State does. I don't think he'd be valuable to almost any other team in the league in terms of the winning and losing. But to Golden State, he's invaluable. And on a team that has great shooters like Curry, Thompson, Poole. Wiggins is not a great shooter. Wiggins is a good basketball player. He's not a great shooter. But Poole, Thompson, and Curry, of course, is, you can argue that between he and Larry Bird, they're the best shooters the game's ever seen. It didn't matter which one you pick, you'd win. Green is what they need. They need that kind of guy. They need that kind of guy. Got Heath Bell today. Neil Coulong today. So they're all coming up on the show. Tomorrow we're going to have Cam Rogers from the U.S. Open. Brandon Short tomorrow. Pete Jensen from the Stanley Cup Final. That starts tomorrow as well. One thing about the Stanley Cup Final, you know what I found interesting about that? You know what nobody's brought up yet? And I'll bring this up with Pete, but Tampa Bay playing in altitude. First two games are in Denver. I've heard nobody bring this up. You know, anytime anybody plays at Denver, the Broncos, you know, it's sort of brought up. I mean, you know, not as much anymore. The Nuggets put 52-80 at the foul line, just to make you think about it. But, and maybe it's because the Avalanche haven't been in the finals since 2001. Maybe that is the reason. But I haven't had everybody bring up the altitude as a possible issue for Tampa Bay to contend with for the first two games of the series. Just thought I'd throw it out there. Because they play there once a year. That's it. Jerry Dulac, by the way, will be on Thursday's show. We'll talk more about the U.S. Open. Roy McIlroy is evidently your new hero.
Oh, yeah, and he just kept going today.
No. You know what? See, don't get too carried away. I mean, Rory McIlroy, you know what's great about Rory McIlroy? Is that he makes his points, but does it with incredible class. In other words, he doesn't go out... Rory McIlroy does not go out there swinging at people. Now, remember, we had McIlroy on the show, what, 2016 we had him on the show?
That's right. Right?
And he just has a way of expressing himself where, yeah, he makes his point, but he doesn't do it with a baseball bat. You know? But he makes his point. Now, Koepka's a little more, not as subtle. How about, okay? Koepka's not as subtle. He made his points with less subtlety today about this. I think somewhere along the line, and there's going to have to be some sort of peace between these two, and I think it's the PGA Tour can make its stand, but I think that the best question Rory got today is that years ago, and several people have done this. Look, Sergio Garcia did it, Poulter did it, Colin Montgomery did it, Rory McIlroy has done it. And a long list of guys, you know, Tyrell Hatton has done it, Victor Hovland's done it. Guess what? What aren't they playing? Let me ask you, what aren't they playing? None of them are playing the European Tour regularly. And that was, and I got to give credit, you're like, what's the difference? And as Rory pointed out, he says, you know, the three of the four majors are here. He said, you know, the best players are here and so forth. But it comes down to the Ryder Cup. Of course, he plays for Europe. But these guys have either left the European Tour. Every once in a while, they get an exemption to go over and play, and they're allowed to do it. Why is that okay?
Because they've had that agreement.
Right, and that's what these two sides have to do. They have to come to an agreement. That's the difference. Now, the question is whether Greg Norman wants to come to an agreement. He may not want to.
That's the problem. He won't want to. He never will, and that's why you're going to have this, and that's why the LIV should get ripped in every way that they possibly can. Because of where the money's coming from and the person who's running it.
So, I mean, that's where it stands. I mean, I'm just saying, there have been some good questions, right? And now now they'll play. What I found interesting, for example, is who didn't have a press conference. See, Phil Mickelson, for whatever you want to say about what he stood up there for 30 minutes yesterday and took questions. Where was Dustin Johnson's press conference? He's a U.S. Open champ. Where was Bryson DeChambeau's press conference? He won the U.S. Open 2 years ago. Where are their press conferences? See, the thing that the PGA Tour needs to worry about is not Phil Mickelson or Ian Poulter or Sergio Garcia or Lee Westwood going to play LIV. They have to worry about Patrick Reed, Bryson DeChambeau, Dustin Johnson, guys who are in the prime of their careers going to play LIV and not playing the PGA Tour. See, that's what they need to worry about. Are there going to be more, quote, defections? That's a bigger issue than whether the older players go to play it. Because the older players, like being there, like, the field up because they're popular with the fans and they've won before and won recently, by the way. I mean, the last seven majors, Let's see. The last, let's see, eight majors. Okay, three of the eight have been won by LIV players. You know that, right?
Yeah.
DeChambeau, Johnson, and Mickelson. Okay. All right, we got Heath Bell coming up on baseball. We will bring up with him about the Phillies, who have been tremendous. Best team in baseball by a wide margin. You're not buying?
In this recent stretch, yeah, but...
I just said that to get a rise out of you.
Let's see how much of a winning streak they can put up this time around.
Well, we're going to talk to Heath about what it means to change a manager and also whether the Pirates should just toss guys out and play the kids.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Ford, Kia, Hyundai, the best in new inventory, all with great warranties. Great pre-owned inventory with the Sunbury Motors Guarantee, so important. And a service staff that backs all this up and backs up your current vehicle as well with inspections, routine, oil changes, and, of course, anything difficult, including diagnostics. They handle it all at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online, sunburymotors.com. Any other complaints? I didn't want to shortchange you.
No complaints. I just can't ignore stupid, as I've told you before, when it comes to the Steph Curry stuff. Other than that, I'm good.
Look, Wiggins has played well. He's a big reason why they are where they are. But Wiggins isn't even in this position unless Steph Curry plays on his team. Okay? It's just the way it is. Doesn't take a genius to do it. I mean, people are just trying to create a conversation. Look, don't do that. Shows like ours are not supposed to be about clicks, okay? Shows about ours are supposed to be about engaging conversation, and when the show's over, does the audience know more than they knew before? To me, that's an obligation of what we do. When the show is over, do you know more about a topic than you knew before? That's our obligation. Not some goofy, let's just go out and, you know, hey, who has a better legacy, LeBron or Tom Brady? Oh, my goodness. You know, you're going to get a click from me. Click radio off. All right, let's talk some baseball now. Ring the Bell podcast, Heath Bell, who during his time was one of the best. Heath, welcome back. It's great to have you with us.
Thanks for having me.
All right. So, here we are at this point. The Yankees, and by the way, it's the Ring the Bell. It's the podcast, by the way, on the Bleav Network. Heath, the Yankees are playing over 700 right now. Is it just one thing that's caused this, or is a lot of things falling into place for them to make them the team they are to this point?
I think this is kind of a couple of years to be making. I don't think it's just like one key. I think they've been kind of gelling as a team the last couple of years, and everything's starting to work for them, the pitching, you know, the relieving and the hitting. So also defense. So I think it's just, everything's working right now. Everything is like everybody's on the same page, and they don't have one flaw. It's kind of like them in the late 90s right now, I think.
Well, it's interesting, in the late 90s, they acquired from Seattle a guy named Tino Martinez in the late 90s.
And he and he took a mediocre defensive infield, which they were. I don't and that includes Jeter. Jeter, you know, honestly, Jeter was an okay fielder.
I think he was an average shortstop. He wasn't the best. He wasn't the worst. Right. He was just a good, solid average.
But Tino Martinez and Mark Teixeira made him better. So what has Anthony Rizzo meant to this Yankee infield?
I think he kind of means the same exact thing. It's like you can have a good infield, but when you get a first baseman that can pick the ball, then your infield's not pressing that they have to make the perfect throw. Because, you know, an average infielder is going to throw the ball wide. He's going to bounce the ball. And if your infielder picks it, it's not an error. Mm. And then you feel better about yourself, like, hey, man, thanks for picking me up. And then all of a sudden you feel like you can go after more, or you're going to be a little bit better because you have that guy out there that is basically going to vacuum everything up and pick everything for you. And he's, you know, if you're a little bit off, he's going to help you out.
All right. The Phillies, you've been through managerial changes, Heath.
Mm-hmm.
So they changed managers, and they've been red hot since. They've only lost one game. Does it make that much of a difference? Does it change the personality of the clubhouse? Do you feel like you have a fresh start when something like that happens? Give me a player's point of view on that.
So a player's point of view to a manager is it's one of those things. You have to feel like the manager's on your side, in your back. Because, you know, baseball is a game of failing. You got to fail 7 out of 10 times, you're a Hall of Famer. If you fail 8, you're a nobody.
Yeah.
But it's the thing is you got to feel like he's on your side. And, you know, if you have a bad game, it's okay. You know, and it's almost like he's your leader. He's your mentor. And if you don't believe in your leader, you don't believe in your boss is doing the right thing, then you're not going to do the right thing. And you'll be like, well, he should do this. He should do that. And when you have a manager that's like very honest to the players, like, hey, you know, I'll just give you an example. Let's just say Bryce Harper's playing right field. And they go, hey, Bryce, you know, I want you to have a day off and, you know, let's pick a day. So he picks Thursday, the day game. Then he goes to the bench and says, you know, John Doe or whoever is off the bench, hey, you're going to, you know, Bryce is going to have a day off on Thursday and, like, say Sunday this week or whichever it is.
Right.
You're going to play those 2 days. So be ready for those 2 days. Then it actually, you know, Thursday comes, Sunday comes, whatnot, the day games. And he does. He starts those guys. Now those guys feel like whatever the manager says, he goes. But if he goes like, hey, Bryce is going to play, he's going to take a day off Thursday, and then all of a sudden he doesn't play over, somebody else plays over Joe Smith or whatever,
right,
or Bryce plays again, and the manager doesn't go and say, hey, look, Bryce, you know, it was his birthday, I didn't know about it, but I'm going to give you the next day, you know, and just be honest with the players. And when managers are honest with the players, you feel like you can achieve more with guys, because you can go out there and, like, say you're the backup guy, your first two at bats you don't hit well, and they're going to pitch hit for you. You feel like, oh, it's okay, I didn't have it today. But he's going to put me out there the next time. You know, or, you know, usually you have two bench guys, and, you know, you root on that guy, and it's not, you're not, like, going against somebody, and you're all striding for the same thing in the same way. And so, like I said, your manager, even though kind of nowadays is not making the lineups and all that stuff, he's your leader. He's your mentor to get the guys riled up to go forward. And when they're losing a game or two, and they're down, he's the guy that picks them up and says, hey, pass them on the back. It's okay. You're going to be out there next time. You're going to play in this game. You're going to pitch this situation again. Don't worry about it. You're my guy. And if you believe in that, then you play so much better.
In fact, I think we touched on this the last time, but in your own personal role, that when managers told you and there was a reliability of when you were going to be in the game, and you knew that day about the neighborhood you'd be in, it made a difference for you. I think that's how you phrased it to me.
Yeah, it's just one of those things. If you know that you're the seventh inning guy or you're the eighth inning guy, if you're three or less runs, you're the guy, you know you're getting ramped up, you're getting ready for that, just like a position player is going to do it. He's going to get play that day game to give somebody a rest. You just feel that sense of pride, like, okay, this is my day. But my job on this team is to pitch either this inning in this situation or a position player to, like, I'm giving these guys days off. I'm not trying to beat out Bryce Harper or so-and-so. I'm here to give this guy a day off. So, and like I said, everybody's on the page, and everybody's fighting for the same thing, is to win that ring at the end. Not necessarily, like a lot of people think, you're trying to do your best for that contract. You're really going out there trying to win a ring. And then all the other stuff comes in the offseason and stuff like that.
The Padres are 4 percentage points behind the Dodgers, and I don't think a lot of people realize that because the Dodgers do get a lot of publicity. Tatis hasn't played yet. What do you like about the Padres to this point, and what potential impact can this guy have once he gets into the lineup?
Well, first of all, Padres haven't had a good leader, a good manager in the last couple of years, and Bob Melvin has fit that role perfectly.
Yeah.
Machado's, you know, having an MVP year. Eric Hosmer was having a really good start off the season, kind of fell off the last couple of weeks. But I really think it's Darmer that's the difference maker. Because if you look at our lineup, most of the team is batting 200, 210, 220. Nobody's killing the ball, but everybody's playing as a team. Everybody's doing their thing. And when Tatis comes back, he's that big name guy. You know, when Machado got traded to the Dodgers, you know, a big name guy that gets traded that kind of spoots them along. Well, I think Tatis is kind of going to be the same thing without a trade. He's going to be back in that lineup. The defense is going to get a little bit better. Kim's been doing a great job over there, batting like 220, but, you know, doing his best he can. But Tatis is just way better. And then Tatis, with his power and the way he hits, I mean, he's basically like having another Machado in the lineup. So it's going to be like getting a big-name trade without trading anybody when he comes back.
It's a really good point. All right, now I'm going to go to the opposite end of the spectrum. The Pirates, and because we're talking about the local team here, once again, really struggling. I mean, lost 7 in a row. They became the last team in the National League to clear 200 runs scored. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I'll tell you, like, from my perspective, and of course, you know, I've announced so many college football and basketball games in my career, so I take it from that perspective. There's always been a saying around here, you'd rather play a guy a game too late than a game too early. You know, it's more of a confidence thing than anything else. When the Pirates come back home, I'm almost a proponent now of, you know what, bring up all the prospects and just start playing them. Now, how do you feel about it? Because what they have now isn't working. So you might as well get the populace excited about something, in my opinion. What's your opinion from the players' point of view?
Well, you've got to figure out what's going wrong. You know, is it? I'm not saying it's the manager's, you know, fault or whatnot, but you got to figure out why our guys not gelling together and what's the deal. You don't want to just – here's the worst thing you can do. You can call up the prospects and play them every day. But do they get in the culture of just losing? And it's like, well, let me just get my numbers. Let me give me a quality start as a pitcher, but I don't care if I win or not.
Right.
And then you're not breeding winning. And position players are like, let me just get my hit. I know we're not going to win this game or whatnot. And then they're going to get down on themselves and this and that. And hitting can be contagious and this and that. And also losing can be contagious. Mm-hmm. So the coaching staff there has got to figure out what's going on. They got to do something. They got to lighten up the mood because, you know, it was a short while ago. Wasn't the Pirates that went and beat L.A.?
Yeah, took three
Dodgers.
Straight. Took three straight.
So let's look back and see what did they do there. Like I said, the manager is kind of like your dictate of where you're going. Look at the Phillies. Look at the Padres the last couple of years. They had brand-new managers that have never been in the big leagues, never played in the big leagues.
Right.
We're just front office guys that coached a little bit in the minors, and then you get Bob Melvin, and it's literally the same team without one of their star players, and they're right behind the Dodgers. So it's one of those things that I really believe the manager is a huge part of this. But with Pittsburgh, what were you doing going into L.A.? You know, what were the guys thinking? What were they doing? You got to go match that. You got to be like, okay, look, we're not going to win the whole thing, but why not? Nobody expects us to win. So you got to get the guys to believe that as a manager. Like, managing games is not like it used to be where you put in the right guys and this and that. I mean, I think it is a little bit, but you also have to inspire the guys. It's a lot of inspirement and getting guys to play all on the same page and to work for the, you know, the best thing for the organization. Like, did anybody think the Pirates were going to win the World Series this year?
No.
Everybody, no. But you have to get the guys to think, why not us? Why not?
Right.
You're like, why not? You know, everybody counts us out, but let's go and show them. We can throw just as hard. We can throw – catch the ball, we can hit the ball, why not? Nobody's going to go, Pittsburgh, we got to really be on our A game, you know? So that's where the managerial, you inspire guys. I feel like managers have to inspire guys more, and they have to, they can't just do the whole team. They got to do individuals. So,
all right. So now I want to ask you one more broad question. How do you feel about analytics in the game?
I feel like analytics is overused. I believe that it's a good thing. It's like a pitcher. It's the easiest way to understand, to tell people. A pitcher has to establish their fastball, and they have to hit their, you know, inside and outside and keep the ball down. And if they have a good curveball, that even makes them a better pitcher. I mean, look at Rivera, Mo. He basically had a cut fastball. He had one pitch, and he was really good because he could locate it.
Right.
But you need multiple pitches. So if you use analytics as your one pitch, like your cut fastball, or you're just your fastball, it's not going to work over time. But if you use it as your second or third, you know, pitch, I think it can work. But you can't just go, well, this guy, he gets on base a lot. Okay, but he's batting .220. Yeah, but he walks a lot. He gets on. Okay, well, this guy has so many quality starts, but he loses every game. You know, This guy has a great spin rotation. Okay, but he gets hit. Yeah, but his rotation's great. You know, the RPMs or whatever.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I know. It's.
And I'm just like, okay, so tell me, is this stat that I think they all use is the WAR stat? You know, that they love, the analytics people, I think, love. So you're telling me that Mike Trout has one of the best WARs in the game, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's wins against run, or what's the
replacement? Wins against replacement.
Okay, so if he has the best winning stat, don't you think he should win? His team should win a lot, but the Angels don't.
Right.
So please explain to me how it's wins replacement. But so you're telling me that if they didn't have Mike Trout, like Mike Trout should make them win 40 games, and they only win 70 games, so they should only win 30 games without Mike Trout? I mean. I don't understand how it equates to winning games.
I think
analytics have forgot about winning games. The good teams hit guys over. They steal bases. They hit and run.
Yes, they do.
You know, bunting, they do a little bit, but not a huge amount. Mm-hmm. And today, but analytics says bunting should be get out of here. Hit and run shouldn't matter. It should be about hitting the ball as far. It's about, you know, how hard you hit it off the bat. Great. You hit the ball 110 miles an hour off the bat, but you're batting .230. So great. You know, like you're hitting the ball 150 miles off the bat, but you're hitting it right at people. I'd rather have a guy hit it 80 and find a hole. Like Tony Gwynn used to say, you know, you just have bad aim. Go for aim for the holes.
Yeah.
You know, like, I don't know how hitters can aim for the holes, but, you know, he was a different breed. But analytics, I'm not huge in analytics. Do I think some analytics is good? Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think it's cool to get better, but it's not a tool to win games.
To me, analytics are an excellent supplement. Okay, because I want all the information I can get. At that point, let me make the decisions. Okay?
Yeah.
And then you go from there. That's how I've always looked. And when it comes to Mike Trout, I'll never forget the year that Miguel Cabrera won the Triple Crown. And the debate was, but look at all of, you know, Trout's wins above replacement. Look, you and I both know the guy replacing Trout isn't as good as he is. Okay, I got it. Okay. I can see that with my own eyes. But Cabrera's Triple Crown allowed Detroit to win. You take him off the team, they're not going to win the division, which they did that year. Trout,
exactly.
They were 10 games under .500 with him. What with Trout? What does it matter what his numbers were?
Yeah, that's my big thing about analytics.
Yes.
You can't argue that part. Like, if you're telling me you give this team and you do all analytics, they should win every single year. Because, like, we all look at analytics like Moneyball and Oakland, whatnot. Yeah. Why don't they win every single year? They're supposedly the best at it. Or even look at the Red Sox have done it. And they said, we win analytics, we win the big-name players, and then we got rid of everybody. We win analytics. They're good for, like, 1 year, and then they suck for, like, two or three. Then they're good for another year, and then they suck.
Yeah. Yeah, as soon as they spend more money. Yeah, right.
Let's have baseball guys. I would rather have a baseball hitter than a guy that just gets on base all the time.
Yep. So
because what happens when we face a really good team, like, just say, the Dodgers or the Padres right now, that have a good pitching staff, they're not going to walk anybody. They're going to strike people out.
Yeah.
So you need somebody that hits the ball.
Yeah.
Everybody else, maybe like Pittsburgh, they're going to walk some guy.
Right.
But not the good teams, not the first place teams. They're going to throw strikes. So you got to get somebody that actually hit the ball good. So anyway.
Well said. Thanks. I always love it. Hey, look, you lived it. That's why I asked it. You know, so I appreciate it. Appreciate you very much. Look forward to our next conversation. It's always great.
Thanks for having me. Take care, guys.
Bell podcast. A lot of anti-Yankee talk in there. Just it's really a mirage.
I agree with everything he said except for Derek Jeter. That's all.
What about him being a good, not great fielding shortstop? He was a good, not great fielding shortstop. I'm sorry, that's just a reality. When he had really good first basemen in Martinez and Teixeira, it allowed him to be better because he could get away with his mistakes. Mediocre. The Yankee infield, to be honest with you, when they didn't have quality first basemen, was not that great defensively, and that includes him. I mean, Jeter is a great player who dove into the stands and made that play against the Red Sox and bloodied his face, who made the behind-the-back play to get Giambi at the plate in the playoffs. He does some great things in the field. But overall, on a 162-game basis, he's not Ozzie Smith, you know. Sorry. I don't want to kill a mirage. He was a good shortstop, not a great shortstop as a fielder. You don't like that analysis. Is there something about truth and reality you're not big into, or was it? Look at his defensive numbers when he didn't have to share Ortino Martinez. You don't want to do that? That would take too much work?
I'll look.
You'll see it's a good first baseman solidifies the whole infield. And my point about the question was not about Derek Jeter. My point about the question was about the impact of Anthony Rizzo at first base for the rest of the infield. That was the point of the question.
Right, I know. I know where you're going with it.
I mean, okay. It's like saying that Ozzie Smith was a great power hitter because he hit a home run in the playoffs against the Giants. No, Ozzie Smith was not a great power hitter. He's a good hitter, who, by the way, is a hitter improved, but in the field, he was exemplary. Jeter is one of the finest clutch players, either on defense or on offense, that I've ever seen in my lifetime. But overall, was he a great fielder? No, he was good. I didn't say he was bad, but I said he was good.
When car repairs get difficult.
Well, I just don't know.
Me neither.
We get good. Sunbury Motors. More than quality new and used cars, Sunbury Motors specializes in complicated auto repair diagnosis. They can handle intricate repairs and even complete auto body with service open Monday through Friday, 7 till 4. And Sunbury Motors has made simple repairs easy. Maintaining your vehicle is necessary. Finding the time to do it is difficult. Welcome to Sunbury Motors Quick Lane. Open 7 till 4, Monday through Friday. Just walk in or call ahead. Relax in their remodeled waiting room with Wi-Fi, beverages, and snacks. Will Sunbury Motors factory trained techs take care of your oil change, tire alignments, brakes, and inspections. Quick Lane, 6:30 to 6, Monday through Friday, Saturday, 6:30 till 2. Sunbury Motors, Ford and Hyundai, North 4th Street, Sunbury. And Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. We take the out of auto repair.